Podcast Macabre, Episode 20, a Bruce Boston collection. Hi, I'm Barry Northern, your host. This week, we're proud to be featuring two flash fiction pieces and two prose poems from celebrated author Bruce Boston. Bruce was born in Chicago in 1943 and grew up in Southern California in an era of rock and roll, the Cold War, and the space race. He lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 40 years, graduating from the University of California, Berkeley, while active in the psychedelia and political protests of the 1960s. He now lives in Ocala, Florida, with his wife, writer-artist Marge Simon, whose work has appeared in Cosmacabre episodes 16 and 19. In addition to their solo work, Marge and Bruce have collaborated on poetry and short fiction. Bruce's work has appeared in hundreds of publications, including Asimov's SF, Amazing Stories, Realms of Fantasy, Strange Horizons, Weird Tales, The Pedestal Magazine, Year's Best Fantasy and Horror, and the Nebula Awards Showcase, and received a number of awards, most notably the Pushcart Prize, the Asimov's Readers Award, the Bram Stoker Award, the Risling Award, and the Grand Master Award of the Science Fiction Poetry Association. He holds the distinction of having appeared in more issues of Asimov's SF than any other author, and of coining the word cybertext. His work stretches from broad humour to literary surrealism, with many stops along the way for science fiction, fantasy, horror, and noir. He's published 45 books and chapbooks, including the novels The Gardener's Tale and The Stained Glass Rain. Bruce has been kind enough to let us take our pick from two of his collections. The first is the Nightmare Collection, published by Dark Regions Press in 2008, and the winner of the 2008 Bram Stoker Award in the Poetry category. It features 53 previously uncollected poems, dark, satiric, and surreal, including reprints from the Pedestal Magazine, Strange Horizons, Weird Tales, and many more. It also features cover art by Marge Simon and 8 gloriously detailed and horrific illustrations by Russell Morgan. The first piece we'll be reading from it is called The Man Who Lives in the Attic. It is read by Abigail Hilton, author, producer, host and narrator of the brilliant audiobook series The Prophet of Panamindora and The Guild of the Cowrie Catchers, which is currently halfway through book 2 and features a full cast of voice actors from around the podosphere. Abby's work is truly top quality and it's hard to believe it's all for free. Abby's flash piece, The Recipe, also featured in Cosmacabre episode 10, which has consistently been our most downloaded episode since it aired.
The Man Who Lives in the Attic. Her best winter coat and gloves. A rare figurine. Henry Moore copy. Limited edition. Zurich. 1943. A bottle of sedatives. Her CD of Joachim Zane. All of this and more. Missing. In the last week, she finds the bread left on the counter, open and stale, empty jars and cans in the garbage. The fridge has been rearranged, and the milk keeps disappearing, though no glasses are dirty. She imagines him standing in the dark kitchen, drinking from the carton, one arm resting on the open refrigerator door while the light within spills across his jeans and bare feet. She sees him roaming the house in her absence, reading her letters, touching her clothes. She suspects that sooner or later she will have to do something about him. But the days have been short this year, her dreams full and satisfying. And he may not be real. After all,
poetry is supposed to be read out loud and heard, preferably a few times, to allow the feelings and meaning of it to percolate. I hope you'll come back to the episode and listen again, or even skip back a few times. Poems often leave different impressions each time you hear them. Hearing poetry read has many benefits, but one drawback is that you cannot see the form of the words on the page. That visual form is part and parcel of a poem's effect, especially in forms such as concrete poetry. And in concrete art, the artist attempts to fashion abstract forms from concrete materials, which, in the case of poetry, are the physical marks left by the arrangement of lines and words being distinct from their meaning. And we've tried to leave blanks, breaks, where there are breaks between stanzas on the page, in the audio. And in prose poems, many sentences start in one stanza and continue into the next. If there are no breaks in the reading, what differentiates prose poetry from flash fiction? Perhaps it's the specific attention to the art of using words in a more poetic and suggestive fashion. The prose writer does this too, of course, and the line between all the forms is a blurred one. The poem The Man Who Lives in the Attic is constructed from 9 stanzas of 3 lines each, which we might call tercets, although there is no rhyming or rhythmic structure to them. But I don't intend to analyse the structure of these works. I am, as you are, I suspect, much more interested in their meaning and how they make me feel. I like this piece for its uncertainty. Is there a man who lives in the attic who comes down at night or in the day when there's nobody home? Such an idea is very creepy. Or is she just a lonely woman and overly imaginative or slightly mad? I like the details about her possessions, which spoke so much about her life. And those details are so concrete, and yet the man in the attic walks the fascinating line between speculative element and metaphor. Our second piece is a flash from Bruce's 30th poetry collection, Dark Matters, illustrated by Danielle Serra, and recently published in 2010 by Bad Moon Books. It's available from Amazon, from the Horror Mall, and from the Genre Mall for $17.95. All the links are in our show notes. And if you're a member of the Horror Writers Association, you can get the PDF version for free from Bruce if you email him. I've read it, and I can tell you I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it on the Bram Stoker Award list for 2010. The story is called A Siren's Tale, and is read by Mer Lafferty. I suspect Mer needs no introduction to most of you. She's the queen of the podosphere, host of I Should Be Writing, editor of Escape Pod, and writer of Playing for Keeps, and so much else to have time to mention. And we're thrilled to have her reading for us this week.
A Siren's Tale. I'll tell you how it was when I was on the island. Not so good. She'd catch me with a smoke and start pacing up and down in one of her tirades, scowling like the witch she was, chewing me out in front of the others. Smoking was a vile habit and would ruin my voice and shorten my breath, and how impossibly dumb could I get? Once she'd wound down, she'd raise one flabby arm and point one horny finger over the heads of the others, sending me to the back of the chorus, like I cared. So whenever the old bitch would spot a ship through her spyglass, we'd have to drop whatever we were doing and start singing. That same damn repertoire every time, all rehearsed from the first bar to the last. Those songs had about as much real passion as a ragdoll nailed to the wall. Pretty soon, we'd see them coming across the waves, straining at the oars, their faces wild with the sound of us and yearning for the touch of us. As always, they were a hearty lot. How else could they be oarsmen? I don't mind saying, I saw more than a few lads. I wouldn't have mind tumbling given the chance. Not a prayer in the underworld of that happening. We were forever singing false songs to men who would never reach us before their boats crashed and they died upon the rocks. "Make it more seductive," she would mouth, waving her arms to the rhythm like she was directing, even though we'd done it all 1,000 times before. We'd throw in a few sighs and get husky-voiced and whispery, like she taught us. Then there would be that terrible noise of splintering wood and their screams upon the wind, and their blood pink in the tide. Never mattered a bit to her, except one more notch in her crown. She was always wearing so much makeup she looked like a clown. If those poor sailors ever got a close look at her and her wrinkles upon wrinkles, eyes mean as those of a rock, the flesh hanging from her bones, they'd start pulling those oars with all their strength in the opposite direction. Though I have to admit, her voice held up well enough through the centuries. Last I heard, she could still outsing the lot of us with tones as solid and clear as temple bells. Like I really care. So enough was enough, and here I am in the city. I made the break like a few others before me, hitched a ride with the deaf fisher who casts his nets on the shadow of our cliffs, where those who know the score dare not sail. All I had to do was bat my eyes at him a few times and show a little thigh, let him have a touch or two in places that don't really count. I would like to have seen the expression on that old cow's face when she realized I was gone for good, and she had to hike up her skirt and go trawling the muddy coastal villages for another with talent like mine. It wasn't easy at first. It's not easy for many in the city, but I'm doing okay. I sleep most of the day and go out nights to work. Though I hate to admit it, I'm not young myself anymore. Daylight isn't kind, and I use my own share of makeup. I won't tell you where I'm living, but you can find me singing in the right dark dives if you know where to look. Now I sing what I want to sing. I smoke when and what I want. And it's like the old song says, ain't nobody's business but my own. Of course, the men who frequent such places are all over me, praising my voice and style and beauty, offering to buy me drinks and breathing down my neck with clouds of cheap whiskey and gin. I cut them short before they get very far. I don't want anything to do with men right now. I'm waiting until I find the right kind of guy, one who smells like the waves of the open sea, one who will crash himself on the rocks for me whenever I want. What can I say? I'm a creature of habit. And I had one classic hell of a teacher.
There was a young maiden, she lived all alone. She lived all alone on the shore. There was nothing she could find to comfort her mind as she roamed all alone on the shore, shore, shore. As she roamed all alone on the shore. There was a young captain who sailed the soul sea. Let the winds blow high, blow low.
In its way, A Siren's Tale is a form of concretism. It takes the almost abstract, metaphorical, and certainly mythological concept of the siren and makes her real and visceral, a true person with needs, desires, and bad habits. And after all that gritty realism, it ends on a metaphor, for there is the aspect of the siren in every woman when a man desires her, no matter what form the rocks may take. Bloody hell, I'm being insightful this week. Bruce's artful words must be doing something to my brain. Next up, we've another prose poem from the Nightmare collection called California Noir. When I read this, I immediately knew who would be the perfect narrator, Anthony Vignitolo. I've listened to many readings of his own prose poems over at his blog, Bukowski's Basement, a showcase for nuggets that range from Skid Row to the Savoy, as well as gritty prose poems and flash fiction. Pour yourself some cheap hooch and settle in over there, a place to celebrate all things wondrous in the gin-soaked literary landscape of Chuck Buck, Jack Kerouac, Tom Waits and Raymond Carver. If his voice rings a bell, it's because Anthony also played the first ever voice part on Cas Macabre way back in episode 1.
California Noir. In dingy sunset motels scattered along the Pacific coast, dead bodies surface with horrid regularity. Unsolved homicides, one and all. Who are these corpses but card-carrying members of some lost American dream? Stabbed, shot, strangled, bludgeoned senseless by the proverbial blunt instrument, sprawled across mattresses on cold bathroom tiles, spread-eagled and face-down in kidney-shaped pools. Their bloated features mock our ingenuity. Noir as night, indifferent as the stucco or sand, they offer no salty sermons for the unwary. Crying sirens taunt us, all our hard-boiled figments jackknife into the breakers of an oil-slick sea.
This poem generates so many images, sounds, and feelings. Black and white with splashes of red, dirt and grime and gleaming metal. Police sirens in the night in a cold and unforgiving sea. Loneliness, hopelessness, an endless depressing series of nameless victims of pointless crimes. It is the complete flip side of that colourful state. Everything that my mental image of California is not, and for hearing it, my sense of that place is richer. Have you noticed it getting darker and darker as we go on? Could it get any darker than a life of hope ending in a gruesome death? Of course it can. Let's descend even deeper with our last piece, a flash from Dark Matters called From the Damnation Cemetery. From the Damnation Cemetery. Listen to me, brother. You don't want to be buried in the Damnation Cemetery. This is no pastoral country setting. No grass grows here, no flowers. There are no shade trees with leafy limbs and songbirds gently chirping. No softly bubbling streams. And overhead, the sky is always dark. Dark with night, dark with rain, dark with roiling clouds that never pass or part to show the sun. No wreaths are ever placed beneath these canted stones. No one would ever visit you here. Not your mother or father, not your children, not a woman who loved you, if there was such a woman, not your friends. Have you ever had any friends? No living human crosses this bare and barren ground, except the gravediggers to cart in another damned soul, and the gravediggers don't seem human at all, with their hulking shoulders and misshapen features and teeth jutting crookedly from their mouths with their animal growls and grunts as they tip another body off its cart into an open grave. There are no coffins here. They throw the dirt right into your face and it fills up your eyes, ears, nose, and worms crawl in and the worms crawl out and they are fatter for their passage. And although you are dead and you can't move an inch, you can't even scream. You feel them gnawing away at your flesh and your innards until there's nothing left but bones, and then you feel them digging for the marrow. Believe me, you don't want to go to your final resting place here, for there is no rest, no peace. There is no sweet silence here, no slowly sinking into what death should be, or what I always thought it should be, an easy and dreamless forever sleep. There is no way to sleep at all with the trains howling back and forth through the day and night. Huge black trains with ugly engines belching smoke into the already darkened sky, sending up sparks along the tracks, carrying the souls of other damned sinners farther down the line. And if it's not the worms nibbling at you or the trains roaring by with the din of a hurricane wind, there are the visions to keep you awake. I don't know what else to call them. You can't exactly hear them or see them, but they come tunneling into your mind and you hear and see them there. It's like feeling the worms or seeing the gravediggers or hearing the trains, and every vision is filled with images of unrelenting brutality and rage and war and torture, and you begin to wonder if these nightmare scenarios are coming from the other dead ones around you. Where else could they be coming from? Surely not from you. And you begin to wonder who else is buried here and what kind of monsters they were in life and what madness still consumes their minds. But believe me, I'm not crazy, not like those other ones. I don't belong here. Some kind of mistake has been made. I keep my sins to myself and I'm very sorry for them. I've repented more than once. All I did was rape and kill a few women. I couldn't help it. You'd had my childhood, my mother and father, for what there was of them. You'd probably done as bad or worse. And I paid for it while I was alive. 12 years on death row, and the hard juice frying me inside and out like a piece of meat on a griddle. And don't let them ever tell you that's a humane way to die. So if you can hear me, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you are, please can you help? Perhaps there's someone I can talk to? Make a call, write a letter, do whatever needs to be done. Have mercy on a poor damned sinner. All I want is peace and quiet. All I want is a nothingness to replace this forever hell.
But I ain't there yet, as you see. Walking train tracks, waiting for a white light. Just
like heaven. Come to me. I'm just a hunk of meat. There's some place I should be. I got no chains, but I ain't free.
Death awaits us all, and we choose to view it in many ways and will throughout our lives. To one, it may come too soon and leave a gaping hole in the lives of those she left behind. Another grows old and makes his peace with death. For the most unfortunate, it is a release from pain, sickness, or sorrow. And yet, how hopeless is the notion that even death cannot end one's pain and misery? How long must one suffer for one's crimes? After all, no earthly punishment can ever make up for a murder, for the intentional abrupt ending of another's life, whether it be a crime of passion, the act of a twisted mind, or the result of the hypocritical framework responsible for that final pull of the lever. However we dress it up, it's all the killing of one person by another. Cast Macabre desperately needs your donations to keep bringing you great stories from great authors. Please don't think someone else would do it, because they won't. Bruce very kindly sold these stories to us at our standard rate, which is £5 for short fiction and nothing for poetry, half of which he donated back to us. We've got more special collection episodes planned from his work, but we don't want to rely on his goodwill anymore, and would love to pay him and all our authors for what their work is worth. Please consider leaving a one-off donation, or better yet, signing up for a monthly subscription over at castmacabre.org. Spread the word. We're on Facebook, where you can see a gallery of our episode covers with comments on artwork, and Twitter for all the latest thoughts and updates. And please join in the discussions over at forums.castmacabre.org. We'd love to hear what you think and read your comments out on the show. Cast Macabre is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Feel free to share it, but don't change it or sell it. All our stories are copyrighted by their authors. Music from musicali.com. Sound effects from the Freesound Project at freesound.org. Theme music by Pain Factor.